Hi, everybody. My name's Steve. I'm the dev manager for the Visual C++ team. So did you explain what our team has? So we own the C++ compilers, the IDE functionality, all of the cross-platform mobile stuff we're going to share with you today, as well as native diagnostics tools such as the DirectX development stuff. Actually, let's start with a couple of questions just to get a sense of who in the room is doing what kind of development. Is anybody in here doing cross-platform mobile development, Android or iOS or Windows Phone development? Android? So a few of you. Okay. Anybody doing iOS development? iOS, Eco-Ribbon, all right.
Now wait.
All right, good. What about game development?
有没有 Yoshi 开发?
这是 game.
Yoshi 开发.
Yoshi 开发有没有?
有没有? 没有.
没人喜欢 Yoshi.
All right, good. So I won't talk about that stuff then. So we have taken a survey of all of our customers, and we asked them, why did you choose C++ as the language to do your development work in? And what you see here is a word cloud of the responses to that. So the title of this slide is not performance. It just happened to be by far the most common response to why the people chose C++. And you can see some other words in here that have similar meanings. You know, speed, efficiency, memory, low level, perf. And so that is a critical area for why people use the C++ language instead of, say, C# or Java. The second one is what we'll call compatibility. And by compatibility, I mean the language is standardized, it's available on many platforms, but it's also, you can reuse your legacy and existing code. You have compatibility, you have pre-existing libraries, or you can bring forward your existing code base. So compatibility is the second reason customers tell us that they're using C++. And the third reason, which I was alluding to earlier, is portability. In the modern world, you need to be able to move your code from platform to platform in order to meet customers where they are. And so one of the things people value about C++ is its portability and the fact that it's cross-platform. So in the What's New talk, we're going to actually organize the presentation around these three ideas: performance, compatibility, and portability. And then we're going to take a look at something that people don't quite associate with C++, which is productivity. C++ has sort of a bad rap for being a language for developer productivity. But we've done a lot of work in Visual Studio 2015 to try to make it a more productive environment for you to do your C++ development. So we'll talk about features for that. Do you want to funny shot anything there?
Sure, I think it...
如果可能大家没有听清楚的话，我可以再稍微解释一下。刚才Steve讲的这部分就是说，我们在每做一个产品的时候，我们要走出去跟很多很多顾客交流。我们这次就是说做了一个这个用户调查一样，就是说，在今天这个时代，在今天这个网络时代。 为什么你还在用C和C加加这样的语言，对吧？这是为什么对你来说非常非常重要？所以他们就列出了很多重要性，就最重要的一条就是这个性能，对吧？性能如果写这个底层或者写这个系统性的方面一些的功能的话，一定还是要用的C和C加加这个语言，这是不可避缺的。同时兼容性和这个可移植性是紧跟着的两个重要的原因。对兼容的话，就是说。 我10年前写的代码，有的时候做一些很小的修改的话，今年还可以用，而这可移植性的话，就是说我 C 加加的代码，我可以在 Windows 上跑，我也可以在 Linux 上跑，也可以在 Android 上跑，也可以在 iOS 上跑，就是说它的可移植性的话，在很多方面的话，说是非常。Beep，
Hi，
Sorry， 对不起啊。 好，咱们继续，就是说这个在各个平台上的话呢，它的可移植性也都非常强，所以我们今天关于2015的一些新的特性和惊喜，就是说围绕着三个 topic 来谈的。而第四点的话就是这个productivity， 也就是说工作效率。 C 加加大家都知道，这是一个很，应该说是一个很古老的语言了，尤其很多现代这个网络时代的一些这个 programming language 而言，那么它的这个语言这些特性的功能，它一些强大性，造成它在使用方面的时候，它的这可用性啊、并不是特别好，因为当初的时候是吧，没有做一种考虑，在语言设计的时候，那但是这不代表我们作为工具开发的这样一个公司的话，我们在这个工作效率方面我们不加考虑，所以我们很大一部分的精力和这个人力物力都投入在如何更好的能够帮助各位作为 C 加加开发人员的话提高工作效率。所以我们今天四 topic。
Not yet. That's what the BB was.
Okay.
So let's talk about the three different levels of optimization that we have in Visual Studio 2015. Actually, we've always had these three levels for at least the last few versions, but I want to really quickly review the types of optimizations. So the first type that we have, we call compilation unit optimizations. And this is the O2 optimization switch and its relatives.So for instance, /O2 means please optimize this compilation unit, the OBJ file that gets built from each source file, using for the most speed. There's also /O1 which says please compile this unit for size so that it's as small as it can be or as fast as it can be. And in compilation unit optimizations, we take one CPP file, create an OBJ file,do highly optimized code generation and local optimizations here, and then we link those together to form an XE. The second level of optimization is what we call whole program optimization. So in this one, which is the /GL and /LTCG fields, and LTCG stands for link time code generation, which is more or less a synonym.Or whole program optimizations. In this style of optimizations, which is on by default in many release modes, what we do is we hold off on doing those optimizations until link time, hence link time code generation. That way we can bring all of the objects together, have global information across those OBJ files, and use it to do a more effective optimization pass.And the most advanced type of optimization available in Visual Studio is what we call profile-guided optimizations. Now, profile-guided optimizations, or as we frequently call them, POGO, which is triggered by the LTCG switches PGI, which is profile-guided instrumentation and profile-guided optimization, is a two-pass optimization run. The first thing you do is you build instrumented binaries a .exe that has some special instrumentation on it so that while the program is running, it will collect information. What you do then is use what we call training scenarios to run your code, to exercise your code, and while it's running, it will be generating information that can be fed back into the compiler with the PGO switch in order to do an even better job of optimization. So for instance, it helps you to understandwhat branches are most frequently taken, or what code paths are uncommon and therefore should go towards the back of the binary instead of the front of the binary. All of these sorts of optimizations are much better in POGO.
Can I take a survey?
Yeah.
好，我想问一下，刚才 Steve 介绍，一个是我们这个 C 加加语言为什么它会性能那么高？那么最大的功劳是因为 C 加加这个 compiler， 而 compiler 一般都是分成两端，一个我们叫前端，一个叫后端。后端实际上是最重要的事，而是你的速度快慢、你的性能快慢的话，完全是由后端它机器语言代码生成的时候，它做各种各样的优化。它刚才介绍的就是三种优化，对吧？这是每一个单元优化、整体优化。我想问一下各位啊、你们在这选择的 compiler 这个 switch 的时候，有多少人是使用这个我们叫 O2 的，或者是 O x 的？请各位举手。好，这位是，这是速度优化，是吧？大家知不知道这跟 O2 这个相对的是一个叫 O1 的一个 switch， 它是干什么用的吗？有没有人知道？啊，它的目的就是说把代码生成的越小越好，所以这两点之间的话是有矛盾的。你不可能说代码生成的最小，同时速度也最快， 所以这个时候的话，这 compiler 必须要做一个选择，而这个选择的话，我们是给你作为这个开发人员，你们做选择。啊，大多数人我们都知道，都是用这个 OR， 因为它要求快，我带它跑越快越好。但是在很多情况下，尤其是你的设置很小的情况下，你的内存不够，你可能需要就是说这个代码编译的时候，如果编得越小越好，我宁可牺牲一点这个速度问题，没有办法，对于我来说这是很重要的。这个可能需要一点点解释，什么叫做 profile guided optimization？ 我们优化做到内部的时候，基本上已经做到头了。你就如果再想优化的话，只能做些很小很小的优化。这第三种优化的话，是需要用户做很大的工作。做什么工作呢？就是根据你自己的这个程序，你的场景，最重要的场景是什么？你选择好了那个场景以后，然后可以用我们这种优化方式去跑。我们的 compiler 后面可以记住你的场景是怎么回事，去搜集这些数据和信息和这个资讯，然后通过得到的这些资讯，我们可以专门对于你一些特殊的场景进行优化。比如说我的程序，我要启动的时候要越快越好，那我们可以把你的启动程序的部分做得特别特别的快，或者是其中一些大量的一些数学运算是我的主要的这些一些功能，那我们就可以把你数学运算的部分做得很好。这其中就需要很多一些高端的一些技术，比如说我们可以在这个把你各个板块之间能够移动一块，这样在执行操作的时候，你的程序就不用不停到这个 hard drive 上去，要把新的这个板把新的模块给调动起来。所以这是基本上我们三层优化的原理在这儿。好，谢谢。
Pops back up. So like one example of an optimization that we have added in the Visual Studio 2013 updates is support for the AVX2 instruction set. And I should also say for a minute that all of these optimizations are things that you really shouldn't have to do much. Once you've opted all the way in through PGO, you'll get most of these things that I'm talking with is just a matter of upgrading to VS 2015. This is just a way for me to kind of show you some of the ways that we've achieved higher performance in Visual Studio 2013 and 2015. But in order to actually get these, with the exception of these ones which have switches associated with them, for the most part, if you just recompile your code, you'll get better quality code out of it. So AVX2 support is a advanced vectorization instruction set architecture. It supports much wider vectors, 256-bit, and new instruction set architectures that help you do fuse, multiply, and accumulate. These are used by the optimizer to generate more efficient code based on your C++. And also, by merely having access to these instruction sets, many of the existing optimizations inside the optimizer get more effective. So for instance, we can do a better job with loop unrolling when we have access to this instruction set architecture. So if you're running on a platform that has the AVX2 instruction set, this should be very helpful. Now I'm going to give a couple of examples of what the optimizations that will happen on your code, just to give you sort of a flavor for the kinds of things we've improved in this release. This is called loop if unswitching. In this loop, we have an invariant condition inside of the loop. So this condition will execute 100 times. But the thing that's interesting to see about it is, of course, this won't really change, right? Some invariant condition is a condition that will not change inside the loop. So realistically, we're doing that 100 times, and we really only needed to do it once. So in loop if unswitching, we look for opportunities to hoist these invariant conditions outside of the loop so that you're not paying them over and over again. Obviously, the longer the loop and the more painful the condition is to execute, the bigger the savings. So this has been a very fruitful optimization in 2015. Okay, this algorithm that you see on the left here is the Black-Scholes financial engineering algorithm for pricing options. So very important in financial software. What I'm demonstrating in this optimization is the ability to vectorize in the presence of control flow. So control flow is like if-then-else statements, right? So usually when you're trying to vectorize a loop, because it's data parallelism, it's important that you not have control flow in the middle of that loop because it blocks the vectorizer from being able to do multiple choices of this loop at the same time because it needs to do different instructions based on what the value of this condition is. So in Visual Studio 2015, what we do is we take that condition and we translate it automatically into a data condition. You can see that what we do is we construct a mask using bitfields and then apply that mask based on the condition and then effectively set this value for the entire vector at once. So what this really is it takes a loop that had control flow in it and translates it into a loop that does not have control flow in it, which then allows us to apply vectorization to significantly speed up your loop. And of course, in the presence of a 256-bit vector instruction set, that can give you up to an opportunity to improve it by 256 times faster for that loop. This one's kind of fun. This is called bit test merging. It's another example of a new optimization in 2015. Code looks kind of funny, right? You've got a bit field, and we're going to shift it over a bunch to test to see if it's set or not, and then compare it, and we test to see which of the bits inside the field are set. This is actually fairly common code. We found many versions of some code that matched this pattern inside the Windows operating system. We actually always use Windows as our first probing ground for testing out the effectiveness of optimizations. Effectively, every night we build the entire Windows source base with whatever last night's compiler was, and this is one that we saw made a big difference in performance inside of Windows itself. So by doing some analysis over this code, we're able to simplify it down to data bit field and then just the number of the bits that were most interesting. And I assure you, this actually shows up in real code all the time. So just a few quick hits on this. As we discussed, I know not many of you are using it, but the /01 flag is great for optimizing for size instead of speed. And we're seeing many more uses of the /01 switch because of the importance of these like smaller devices, be they phones or Raspberry Pi 2s or Arduinos and what have you. Like the ability to generate small code for small devices with little footprints is more and more important. And so in Visual Studio 2015, we are able to continue to do vectorization style optimizations, even in the presence of optimization for size instead of speed. The Parallel STL is another cool next generation library coming to you in C++ maybe 17 or maybe 22 or whatever. It is a STL algorithms translated to be easily parallelized. So effectively you can take, imagine a vector sort using the STL and place the word PAR at the front of it to tell it to parallelize it, or VEC at the front to tell it to vectorize it. And then you get free parallelization or vectorization using those STL algorithms. Our implementation of that is open source and available on CodePlex. And our optimizer has special support in it to make these algorithms run quite quickly. So I do recommend that if you have a code base that you feel is ripe for parallelization or vectorization, and you do use STL algorithms quite a bit, and you think that those could be easily parallelized or vectorized, please give that a look. And just a couple of other new instructions emitted for bit tests like we were talking about before, and a large number of other small scalar optimizations to match with those. Okay, we talked a bit about profile guided optimizations in the beginning. So no one's here was writing any games, right?
No.
So, but don't worry about that. These are, for the first time ever, we have Pogo available for the Xbox One. And so in the past year, we've had many internal Microsoft game studios take their code, which originally was not available to be used with PGO because we didn't have the runtime for it, and port their code to use PGO. And so what this gives us is a good way to measure what the potential benefits are for PGO games. Now, these are games. These games are very CPU bound. And what we're seeing is 20 to 25% improvements when recompiling the Fables Legends game, the Project Spark game, and Kinect Sports for the Xbox One. So this is just another in a long series of commercials to go and really try out PGO. We've worked hard to make PGO more attractive. We make it easier to reuse stale counts from your training runs so that you don't have to run the training runs every single time with for small changes. We've made sure that the PGI, the instrumented builds, run much more quickly than they did before, so it's easier to run your training runs. We've improved the layout, its ability to lay out the code for effective optimization, and of course, just making the builds faster, which has been a blocker for some. If you are doing any building for ARM32-based systems, like this phone, that would be our newest backend. So we, of course, have had an x86 backend optimizer for 25 years, and an x64 one for 15 years. The ARM one we've only had for 3 years, and so we've implemented many of the existing optimizations for the other backends, and now we are applying them in ARM as well. So this is an example of improved cyclic unrolling in the ARM32 backend. But the moral of the story is if you're compiling for ARM, you should see significant performance wins. Okay, so those are just some quick summaries of performance improvements available in Visual Studio 2015. Do you want to summarize anything?
Sure, yeah.
我们就关于这个 C++ compiler 性能的部分，就说到这边就开始讲完了。我想各位就是说，我们其实讲了那么多，我想各位只要记住两点。第一点的话，每一个 Visual Studio 的版本，我们生成的代码速度都会加快，这是第一点。第二点的话，我想对你们更重要。基本上刚才讲的所有这些东西，除了 PGO 以外，没有任何地方需要你们做任何工作，你们不需要改写任何一行代码，唯一要做的就是升级到2015，我们所有的新需求的工作所产生的这些优点。都能让你们实现，所以这是最重要的两点。之所以我花那么多时间讲的话，只是想给大家介绍一下关于这个 compiler 后端的一些优化，都有些哪些方法、方式、方法，以及我们在这方面做的努力，好吧？before 我们进一步，我想想问各位一下，Steve 刚才讲用英语讲是不是速度快了一些？大家理解还行吗？还是需要他讲的慢一点？还是需要我更多的进来去做一些翻译？没有关系，可以给你讲，就是如果有需要他说讲的慢一些的话，可以告诉我。听见。
既然 compiler 已经这么聪明的话，是不是说是 test version 的部分呢、啊？我们应该是要人工优化呢，还是就全部交给编译器去处理？
他问了一个很好的问题。So what he's asking is that since our compiler is so smart in optimization, Does he still need to think about optimizing his code himself?
So I think it was, famous computer scientist's name here. The trick is write your code for understandability. Worry about that first. As Ray probably said at the beginning, I don't know, wasn't paying a ton of attention, it was in Chinese and fast. Him and I used to run the profiler team in Visual Studio. And so I've been a developer on performance tools for a lot of times. And so what I always recommend people do is write your code for understandability, then figure out where the bottlenecks are, and then make targeted changes to that you need to make for performance. Like, let us try first. Like, the optimizer is very smart, and it's making decisions that have global information about it. There's a very good chance that the optimizer will do a better job than an individual dev in the broad. You'll never beat us in the broad. But then if you find where the bottleneck is, like, let's imagine you were in Visual Studio 2013, and you had this loop. And you work for a hedge fund, You're making big money on Wall Street, and the most important thing for you is this loop run as fast as possible, right? Imagine that scenario. So in 2013, we wouldn't have vectorized that loop. In 2015, we will. But in 2013, we wouldn't have. So in that case, imagine you go, you run the profiler, you find out this function is your problem, then by all means, go in and do whatever you need to do in order to hand modify the code to speed it up. But don't do that on everything. You're going to spend a lot of time on stuff that isn't going to make a difference. Wait until you've identified where the bottleneck is, and then apply your smarts to trying to write the code as fast as possible. Don't get me wrong. Get algorithmic complexity right. Don't use a O of N squared algorithm where you really do need an O of N algorithm. But in these cases, let us try first, and then if it's still too slow, then you go in and modify it, is my sort of broad advice.
Sorry, 经常很多人看到很多人使用各种各样的小花招和技巧，把自己的代码以为写得很顺的速度，结果别人任何人看不懂。但到后来连自己也不知道怎么回事，更没有办法去修改。实际上，这是不好，这是很不好的一个practice。第二点的话，如果你写底层的，特别像Bitfield这方面的这个优化，我估计你可不大可能做的比我们更好。这不是我在吹牛，因为我们这个做后端这帮人的话，实际上他一辈子他整天吃饭的时候想的都是如何的优化。 所以你自己的脑筋跟他们相比的话，可能你不值得上的话，这方面的脑筋，这是我们的想法。所以之所以就是说你的怎么优化你的代码呢？首先第一点，在这运算逻辑方面，其实这方面实际上你心里面还是很清楚的。只要你的运算逻辑写得非常非常的无效，我们 compiler 怎么帮你优化，也不肯帮你的这个速度往这个加快，对吧？我们肯定用过很多这样的应用程序，觉得慢得不得了。 简直慢的觉得是不可思议，那这些东西这个 compiler 我们的优化是帮不了你的忙的，对，如果你要想把你自己的这个应用能够做得更好的话，实际上我可以推荐就是说用这个速度剖析器，剖析器叫 profiler，在你写好以后做一些系统性的分析，看你的程序在里面哪些部分是所谓英语里面叫 bottleneck，对，把你的时间和精力花在那些方面，你得到的优点的话，得到的这个益处。
Okay, so we're going to talk about compatibility now, but this is another one of these cases where I think I'm going to start with a question. Can you raise your hand if you are using C++ 11 or C++ 14 in your code today? Okay, so a few of you. Okay, good. One of our biggest areas of focus in the past year to 2 years has been catching up. Just to be honest with you, we have been behind in this area for some time. My team spends a lot of energy working with the ISO-CPP community to help set the future of what C++ will be. Like 3 times a year, about 7 or 8 people from my team travel to wherever the ISO-CPP convention is meeting in order to help drive forward what the C++ language should be in the future. So C++ 11 is done, C++ 14 is done, we're working on C++ 17 right now. My team is working hard on those, and many of the features that we've added in here actually are future C++ 17 features, we hope. But we've also spent the last 2 years trying to get the features that have been added for 11 and 14 into the compiler. So just as an overall statement, right now we have one feature that from C++ 11 that is not yet implemented. It's called Expression Sphene. Right here, Expression Sphene. This stands for Substitution Failure is not in error. This is used primarily for library developers, so most application developers won't miss it. But everything else you see here is now finished. This was our RC list. Since RC, we have completed constexpr completely. We still have work to do on these ones for C++ 14, the largest one being extended constexpr, and we'll talk about constexpr in a few minutes. But we have significantly increased our language conformance for 2015. So I'm going to go through sort of an overview of various new features in the language that I think are particularly useful. I'm going to skip some slides because I don't want to go too deep on this. If you're interested in C++ 11 and C++ 14, please come grab me in one of the breaks and I can point you at really great overviews or talks that my team has done online and other documentation for more details on this. So I'm going to go probably pretty fast. Anything there anymore? No. Okay. So lambdas. Lambdas are anonymous functions, first class objects. We have improved our ability to use them for and generic lambdas is one of the biggest areas that we've improved in 2015. This allows you to use lambdas that have auto in them. So this thing doesn't care what you're passing into it. It will simply pass it on to standard C out. You don't have to type it. It's okay. Again, super useful in combining libraries with application code. So for instance, here you have a print function that wraps C out, and you can pass it a string, you can pass it an integer. It doesn't matter. The compiler will do the right thing and emit the right code to call into this generic lambda. Likewise, we have generalized lambda capture. In this situation, these are the captures for a lambda function, the things inside the square braces. And you can see that we're moving 4, which is a unique putter of an int, into the capture so that you can evaluate it here. So these are very, very useful for library developers. And so if you're interested in lambdas, you should check that out. NoExcept is a really cool feature. In C++ 2003, there was an attempt to do exception specifications using the no-throw keyword. It was flawed in a lot of ways, and NoExcept is its replacement. NoExcept allows you to mark a function, much like you do with const, to say that this function will not throw. The goal of this function, or of NoExcept in general, is to allow you to mark for the compiler which functions you are not expecting to throw, and you can also use this as part of the interface of the function then. So we don't have to generate a bunch of exception handling code in order to do this. When you mark a function this way, what it means is if this function throws an exception, just tear down the process, we're done. And so it allows us to generate better code. It can be used like this to mark a function as NoExcept, but it can also be used like this in order to say this, is f NoExcept, and if you call NoExcept with f, the function, inside the parentheses, that will be set to true or false based on whether or not this function is NoExcept. So you can use that to sort of aggregate the usage of NoExcept. And likewise, you can, when you're doing this style of marking things NoExcept, you can say void of h is NoExcept if f is NoExcept. And then if you violate this, it will tear down the process. Overall, the goal is to be able to use exceptions in much more applications than previously. In some applications, particularly real-time and game development, exceptions are uncommon. The intention here is to make them more common, more usable. Inline namespaces is the ability to do namespace foo and then inline namespace bar. Names in foo bar can be used without the namespace name, so you can still call this as foo colon colon foo, but the name is decorated with the inline namespace name. This allows you to mix and match from like new versions of implementations. So that is useful. Thread local storage, very simple feature, allows you to mark that a given piece of state should exist only one time per thread instead of once per function. So, or global. So imagine static is if you want just one copy of it for the entire application. Thread local is if you want one copy for each thread, which is very useful in multi-threaded programming. Thread safe local static initialization. This slide is broken, but the basic idea of thread safe local static initialization is that there was a bug in the original implementation of thread local static initialization for the earlier versions of C++. Now you can be confident that if you call something if you initialize a local statically, that it will really actually only happen one time. That's an improvement in the language itself. I'm going to skip ref qualifiers. Binary literals and digit separators. This is another convenience feature for making it easier to read source code. So you can now specify not only hex numbers like this, but binary numbers like this. And for added convenience, we can use the tick mark to mark off the parts that you're most interested in so that you can break up values. You can use this on UNT32s. You can use it on hexadecimal numbers, just normal numbers, hexadecimal numbers. And you can even break up binary numbers using this. If you really get excited, you could even break up every tick mark. But if you do this, I will slap you. Func is another very small convenience feature. Lots of folks like to do tracing code using the ability to say underscore func, and it will be replaced with the name of the function. So this is really good for inserting trace code into your application, and it can also be used in templated code. You can see you still get F here. Microsoft had an extension that did this before, which was __ capital function, which is from existing things, but we recommend, as always, that you go and replace any extension with the standardized version when that standardized version becomes available. Align of and align as are useful for today. People use like pom pragma pack in order to make sure you get alignment right for options. This is a standardized way of doing that that doesn't use pom pragmas. So the align of is the new keyword, and you pass it in a type, and it will align that type, the value here, the size t, to be on the alignment of this. And this will tell it to align as the alignment of a 32-bit number. So you can combine these two to do alignment operations on your code. This one is super useful. Unicode character literals. So we have multiple character types. These are 8-bit, these are 16-bit, these are 32-bit. Depending on where you are in the Unix or Unicode code page, these ones here are very long, of course, right? And actually uses the top 32 bits. So this one would never have worked in a 16-bit. So the key learning here is for a car type, you don't need to put any prefix on it. If you want to say this should be done as a 16-bit operand, then use the little u. And for 32-bit, use the big u. And of course, you can continue to use that with the escaped versions of those characters as well. Unicode string literals are also great. You can do the same thing with strings. You can see that for the car, you can be explicit and say, I want the U8s, little u for 16, and the size of these will be affected by that. And, of course, capital U for 32. Extending that idea out into strings, we have the normal car-based string here, a U16 string, which is a Unicode 16 string, and a Unicode 32 string. So much better handling of Unicode instead of having to have platform-specific whitesters and stuff like that. Return type deduction, another ease of writing kind of feature. It allows you to use auto as the return type and have it automatically deduce the correct return type. I use this all the time when I have a function that needs to return some complex iterator. It's much easier to just type the word auto, and the compiler will get it right for you. And just as a reminder, even in a situation like this where the type isn't knowable at compile time, for instance, this type will return whatever the type of operand star of T and U is, and until you know what T and U are, you don't know that. So rather than making something complicated here, just auto multiply T, U, star. So that makes it much easier to write generic code. So now, just kidding, but in C++ 17, we're hoping that you can just simply replace the entire code with the word auto. Let's skip that. User-defined literals. So sometimes when we say user-defined inside of the language specification, what we really mean is that it's also library-defined literals. So this is an example of if you wanted to write a literal prefix for euros that converted dollars to euros, you could simply do this. Operator, quote, quote, underscore, and then the symbol you want to use, and then write the function for the conversion. So for instance, then if you declared something as the cost of coffee in dollars is equal to 3.50 underscore euros, it will convert that into dollars. So that's cute in and of itself, but where it really comes into play is using the new STL functions that rely on it. So the standard type library in, say, the chrono header has a definition for, you know, hours and days and milliseconds, and it'll convert time objects into the appropriate thing. And so that's the main place where it's used.
Sorry. 这个地方非常有效 虽然刚才讲解觉得很好玩 这个dollar, US dollar 和这个euro 或者和台币的兑换 但实际上的科学 这个运算当中的话 这个非常非常有效 因为你可以把很多科学这个东西 一些单位都自己定义 这样写写的话 你的program的可读性非常之强
This quote, quote, underscore.
Okay. You wrote, 就上面是已经乘以1.1, 所以它下面就是代表乘的意思。
所以你说是这个地方是吧?
是乘的,自动就是给我换算的。Yeah. It's basically used for conversion operators primarily. So, const expert. Everybody at some point in their life has probably written this macro. The goal of constexpr is to allow you to do more things at compile time instead of runtime. And so when you use constexpr, what you're saying is the following expression's value, if it can be computed at compile time, should be computed at compile time. So for instance, this doesn't actually work. Right, count of done this way will error out and say expected constant expression because this isn't actually knowable because it won't execute this function at compile time in the old C++. In the new C++, you replace that const with a const expr, which says this is a compile time constant expression, and so now this will work. That code that you see right there. So you can even do something as crazy as this. If you have you can actually compile Fibonacci numbers at compile time, and what happens is the compiler has more or less an interpreter in it, and it will interpret this code at compile time, and then simply replace this expression with the value 55. So, I mean, I don't know that you should actually use Fibonacci of 10 to do the size of this, but you get the idea. It's being able to compute many more things at compile time that you then don't have to do any execution for Think of it as an evolution of the kinds of things you do with pound defines today. Instead of relying on the preprocessor, which is a nightmare in terms of maintainability because there's no tooling for it and it's very hard to debug issues in it, ConstExpert can use the actual language to do those things. I think as we go forward, you'll see us trying harder and harder in C++ to kill the preprocessor and everything it's used for. Is anybody written in C# code in here? You written C#? Yeah. C# has a yield, which is a very useful generator function creation mechanism. So this function here says return multiples of n. And what this for loop is keep going forever and yield out the current number, then add 3, and then come back. So the way this actually would work is, and if you've never seen it before, this is called the range 4 syntax for for loops. So what this means is for each I in multiples of 3. So this obviously runs forever, but that's okay, because the way it works is every time the range 4 loop goes in here and makes a call for it, it just runs it one time until it hits the yield statement, it returns out and remembers where it was, and then it prints it out, comes back around, and does the same thing again. So this is a generator function, this is what we call these. There's not a slide for it today, but there's also the use of await, much like in C#, where you can do inlined asynchronous calls. So like for instance in WinRT, you can say, get file async immediately follow. That we'll get a pool going to see how long I can talk before we knock this over. That's the second time I've done it. That allows you to call asynchronous function calls one in a row. Okay, so that's another nice sampling of new C++ 11 and C++ 14 features. As I mentioned before, if you're interested in this stuff, please see me afterwards and I can point you at all sorts of good materials for learning the new C++ 11 and 14. All of the compilers in the world are moving along the C++ 11 and 14 things. We're starting to see more and more libraries written using this version of the language. So you now have access to use those libraries inside Visual Studio. And we are very committed to getting all the way up to date with C++ 14, which we'll be doing in the updates to Visual Studio, not in the next version.
我想讲一下，就是说这个C加加11和11时四季以后的实际到底在实际的意义在什么地方。除了一些很小的地方，比如刚才大家也看到，有些地方对我们日常工作有很大的帮助，有些问题简化了，有些东西以前非常非常可以实现的东西，现在变得很容易的实现。更重要的一点的话，它实际上就是强调从此以后有了一个这个实际上国际性的语言标准。 所有的compiler的话，你实际上都要被执行，不管是我们的compiler也好，还是 Intel 的 compiler 也好，还是 谷歌和这个苹果他们之间做的一些 compiler， 还是 GCC， 大家都必须要按照同一个标准来实现这些语言功能，这实际上非常重要。因为以前的话，前些年的话，大家都各走各的道路，我们这个 Visual C 加加的compiler， 我们所支持的语言特性。 和如何支持某些共同的语言特性，完全是我们自己一套。这样的话，对于这个从业人员来说的话，非常非常的就是说不方便。尤其是像写一些这个库、写这个 library 的话，他如果他要写什么，他在 Windows 上跑，他同样的东西他写一段东西，他就是针对 Windows 要实现一回，然后针对在 Linux 上面要实现一回。有了这样的标准以后，这样的可兼容性，可兼容性包括两点：一个是你自己的代码根据时间的这个推移。 是否依然保持可兼容性？还有更重要一点，你这个代码在各个不同的 compiler 和不同的平台之间的可兼容性怎么样？有了这样标准以后，大家都共同来执行这样的标准，对于我们这个日常生活和整个这个行业帮助是非常非常之大。这是它长远的更重要的意义。